You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Oh, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. We got two very enterprising young fellows today going to talk to us about two things. One is how they came up with this great idea to digitize bar payment and ordering. And then secondly, we want to hear about how this is going to help bar owners get back into the game quicker, faster, more efficiently, and safely, given the COVID constraints. So, Joe DePinto and Dan Wagner, welcome to the Pilgrim on the 405. You guys got a fascinating story. Tell us how you met.
So Dan and I, we played baseball together. We met in the minor leagues for the Chicago White Sox. I am from Los Angeles originally. Went to school out here at USC and graduated in 2011 when I was drafted. Played 4 years. Dan is from North Carolina, just outside the Charlotte area. Went to college in Nashville, Tennessee, was drafted a year earlier and played 6 years. And basically, we met in AA. We were roommates together. And over the course of that season, having, you know, traveled quite a bit by bus, the different towns that you go to, you know, every 3 days or on the road, we did go to some bars after the games every once in a while. We had a couple waters. And we, you know, if you're in a new town every week and you lose your credit card, you know, it's a tremendously frustrating experience not having any money while you're on the road. And then at the same time, you know, every little bar or restaurant we would go to, you see the same issues of, and I have to wait to get my drink. I have to wait to close out. It's just a frustrating overall experience. It's something that we thought should be, you know, just basically about the fun. And we figured, you know, technology can definitely help with situations like that. So our careers both came to an end in 2014. And we kept in touch. We kept talking about ideas. And I'll let Dan get into that a little bit. But basically, you know, we raised money and decided this is something that we want to pursue. We think there's a real business to this. Dan eventually ended up moving to California and kind of have an interesting story from there. If Dan, you want to explain kind of your living situation and what we were doing when you first got out here.
It's crazy. I think that's already been 4 years, but yeah, basically just baseball career ended and was living on the East Coast, as Joe mentioned. And we had managed to put together, you know, a nice little business plan and raise a little bit of capital to sort of get the MVP version of BarPay off the ground. And sort of once the developers gave us the go ahead, I pretty much packed my bags and got a one-way flight to California to test this thing out. You know, obviously I assumed that would be just either crashing at Joe's place or something along those lines. We'd figure it out as things progressed, but it turned out to be a really fun situation. We lived the first 7 months or so on Joe's parents' RV, you know, parking it outside of our first pilot bar, and just a wild, you know, crazy time. And then spent an additional 6 months living on another buddy's couch in Manhattan Beach, which I ended up a couple years later, ended up meeting my now fiance, and I live here now. So it's been a wild, crazy story, how we got to where we are and sort of how we're positioned now with this pandemic that's in front of us and what we feel is going to play into BarPay's favor in the long term. It's been pretty wild.
So you guys had to do a lot of testing, right? To make sure it works, come in and buy it and see, make sure they deliver the drinks to you, right?
So what ended up happening, the reason why Dan, I guess, decided to move out here is through when I was in school, I got to know a bar owner of, it's called the 901 Bar and Grill. I'm sure a lot of USC alumni in Orange County and Los Angeles know what the good old 90 is. One of the owners there was a big baseball fan, so we got to know him pretty well. And obviously when we had this idea, he came to mind immediately is, you know, if this will work at the 90, this has a chance to work at basically any bar. The 90, if you don't know what it is, it's literally the only bar, or at least it used to be, within walking distance of USC. And this is before the days of Uber. So 3 or 4 nights a week, you would have a line of 100 plus people outside. There would be, you know, sardines inside. It's just crazy environment. My friend, his name is Leo Amari, and his business partners, they ended up opening a couple other venues. They allowed us to test it at the 90 to begin with. We did have to like spend, you know, 2 or 3 months there in a beta where we would literally be walking around, you know, giving out flyers to people on the street. Hey, students, you know, do you want to test this? We'll give you a free drink or whatever it would be to incentivize them. And this was during the summer when there really weren't that many kids in school. So we ended up, like I said, we were being there pretty much every day for 2 or 3 months in a row. And we got to the point where right before school kicked off in August, we felt like the product was in a good enough place. The bartenders and the staff understood how it worked. It was time to push to the App Store, and it just launched, you know, fairly perfectly with when USC went back to school. and the thing just exploded. I mean, we did a lot of marketing, guerrilla stuff where we were still there, you know, doing the free drinks, handing out flyers to people in line. But, you know, once kids started using the app and once word started getting around, it was pretty quick to see, you know, the adoption get to 10, 20, 30% of their customers on a given night using the app. And at this point, we still only even had like the iPhone. So we were missing a decent size of the market. Now the college kids, more of them at USC do have iPhones and Android, but still it was pretty cool to see, you know, several thousand downloads within the first month of launching. And then what ended up being, you know, cool again was the same ownership group of that venue went ahead and opened an equivalent bar over in Westwood at UCLA. And we got to actually learn from day one, the entire staff process, the owners, the GMs, what they go through on a day-to-day, because we literally opened the venue with them. From day one, they had bar pay. And that venue is called Rocco's Tavern. It's part of the Rocco's franchise. There's a bunch of them in LA now. But basically, that kind of gave us the full insight to the owner side of the business. So we obviously knew the idea came from being consumers, but, you know, learning about this is what our owners are expecting. These are the headaches they get on a day-to-day basis. How can we make this product, you know, as simple for them as possible and intriguing for them as possible as well? And when that bar ended up opening at the end of December, basically it opened in January 2017, we had the same thing happen there. I mean, we did the promoting. They had a bunch of TVs. They would put bar pay ads up and it just exploded. We had enough people downloading to the point where we were actually able to Tinder, the dating app came to us and wanted to run like a week-long promotion. So within the app, we're adding, you know, swipe right, rum and coke, super like Long Island iced teas. And it was great. You know, the kids are showing up. They're showing like if they have Tinder, they get a discount on the drinks. And it was just really cool to see, you know, our kind of vision all along was, can you get this in enough hands to offer, you know, brands a way to advertise in a very segmented market? For example, like there are quite a bit of like restrictions on alcohol advertising within bars and outside of bars. But with our product, you can literally get, you know, if you're a Bud Light or a Corona and you want to market to somebody, you can get them right as they're about to buy a beer at a bar, as opposed to just putting up a billboard on the side of the freeway, which gets a lot of impressions. But in today's day and age, it seems like it's all about conversions.
Tell us what the app does.
It's really simple, and we built it with simplicity in mind. So if you're just talking about in terms of functionality, I mean, the way that it works is the consumer, they select the venue that they would like to go to. Obviously, it has to be a bar pay betting venue. And then once they select that venue, they just one tap, open tab. You can view the full menu based on what the venue wants to do. It could either be the full drink menu or both food and drink. They select their items. It's a lot like sort of adding to a shopping cart, if you will. So you have like an order overview of the items that you want to order. And then you just simply place the order. And what's actually technically happening on the bar side, I think it's what, sort of what sets us apart from some of the other things that have sort of existed like this. The core challenge with the entire thing is, how do you make the process of getting a drink faster, better? You know, because that was the problem that we were trying to solve, is like, why does it suck to get a drink at a busy bar? Why does it sometimes it take 10, 15 minutes? You're waiting to just order a beer. And so when we started looking at this thing from like a holistic perspective, it's like, okay, where can we save them time? Because that's ultimately what it comes down to. How can we save the bartenders time, give them more time to make more drinks? Because there's a huge demand behind the bar of people that need a drink, and there's three or four bartenders. And so what we noticed and what we saw was that sort of the point of sale system is a business owner's friend, and it's a necessity. In their busiest hours, it can be somewhat of a pain point, because based on the studies that we've done, in your busiest hours, if you're a bar owner that has a slam-packed bar from, you know, 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. or whatever, your staff is spending almost 50% of their time with their back to the customer punching things in on a point of sale. And so there have been some other, we don't necessarily consider them competitors because the way that we've done this, there have been others, things that have been similar, technologies that are trying to send basically the order to a tablet or to an iPad or something like this. And the core problem with that is that you just introduced a new point of sale system that the staff has to learn. And so with bar pay, basically what happens is the consumer on their device punches in the order, and it simply prints a ticket behind the bar. This is something that bar owners or bartenders don't have to learn. They're already doing it with their service well tickets. So if you're ordering the traditional way and you're sitting at a table, server comes up, takes your order. They'll actually go to a separate point of sale system that's not behind the bar. They'll ring in your order, and then that'll fire either drinks behind the bar and it prints a ticket, or it'll, you know, send the food, fire the food orders into the kitchen. So BarPe, in a way, operates a lot like a service well. So there's a very, very little learning curve into actually how it works. I guess the one thing that I left out there would be the consumer has the choice as to whether they want to pick up their order at the bar or if they want to have it delivered to a table. And basically what we do is we just match sort of the existing floor plan. And you can just display like this is, you know, table number 23 if you're using BarPe, or put a little table topper up so that the consumer knows as they're placing their order, oh, I'm sitting at table 23. And they just basically say, I want my food drinks delivered to table 23. And then obviously the server would deliver it. From behind the bar's perspective, again, it just they get a little note on the ticket that prints saying, hey, this is a BarPe pickup order. And they just sort of set the drink to the side, and they wait for you to come up and show an order number, and you just pass it over. There is no exchange of credit card or anything like that. It's just the staff never has to visit the point of sale system.
So BarPe keeps my credit card.
Yeah, so we actually use the same processing company that Uber and Airbnb uses. So if you, as a consumer, if you feel comfortable with those services, we trust all sensitive information to a company that's PCI compliant. We don't actually touch any of that. So just like Uber, any of these other services, you store your credit card on the application. You just have to do that once. You don't have to do that once for each venue that you go to. You just store it once, and then it works across all the different venues in the network.
It sounds to me like what you have done is you've eliminated one step of the process, right?
Yeah. If you really start diving into it, we've eliminated a number of steps.
Right. But I mean, essentially it's that the waiter coming, taking my order, and then going and doing something with it.
Correct.
Can I order before I even get there?
There are a lot of different delivery services that you can download. We wanted to sort of master the in-venue mobile ordering and payments.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that it actually works, we have a pretty cool feature. You can't actually open a tab at a venue unless you're within a certain geofence. Mm-hmm. So let's just call it 300 yards. Mm-hmm. So you have to be within 300 yards of the venue to open a tab. What's cool about that is if you forget to close your tab, which is a common thing amongst youngsters in bars, you're having a good time with your friends. Someone's like, hey, let's go over to this spot. You forget to close your tab at the bar. You leave. It's not until you get to the next place where you're like, oh man, you know, I forgot my card at the other bar. What's cool about BarPe is that same threshold that lets you open a tab, it'll actually close your tab if you have a tab open and you cross that threshold. So you don't ever have to worry about closing a tab or anything like that as well.
I agree with you. Some of the most frustrating parts of going to a bar are waiting for somebody to come take my order.
Yes, for sure.
And then waiting for them to bring it back to me.
Yep.
And it sounds to me like when I punch it in, that winds up behind the bar with the bartender immediately.
That's correct.
Right?
That's correct. Yep.
I think a great example would be when people first get to a venue, and from a business owner's perspective, first thing you do when you walk into a bar is you want to get a drink, or when you're seated at your table, you know, you want to order your drink. It might be 3 or 4 or 5 minutes before your server comes up and introduces, and then she still has to go and put your order in, or he has to go put your order in. It's like, that could be an extra sale that the venues get out if the customers, you know, that's
well, and if the geofence is 300 yards, I could have a drink ordered before I even get out of the car.
That's correct. That was the goal. It needed to be close. So the way that actually works, because we do have a direct integration with Uber, it needed to be what we would consider close enough, like that's walking distance,
mm-hmm.
in order to open a tab. So, it, you know, imagine, okay, I'm a couple blocks away from this spot. You can open a tab.
Great.
Yep.
That's great. We've been talking about the advantage for the consumer. What's in it for the bar owner?
So there's a couple of things that they get. Number one, anytime you have an app like this, like obviously people are creating profiles. Well, now we have the ability to reach them in ways that are, you know, a little bit better than just a flat out Instagram post or something like that. So, and this is part of what the guys at the 9-0 and at Rocco's Tavern are so interested in is once you have people using the app, you can then reach them, you know, at any point really with a push notification. You can do email campaigns with the app or an in-app notification. And basically the way that works is, you know, say you own a bar and it's Tuesday night and it's not very busy and, you know, you want to get some sales, you want to get some people in. Well, if you have, you know, this app and you have a user base of a couple thousand people around your venue that have this app, you can send out a push notification. Hey, stop by Rocco's, you know, for the next 2 hours, 50% off all beers, something like that. And maybe you get 20 people in. What we've seen is usually about when we send out a push notification, 1% of the recipients will end up showing up. So we would have these venues where, you know, where there are 4,000 or 5,000 people around. Well, if 1% shows up, now your bar is almost half full. It's like, wow, this is pretty powerful stuff. So that's obviously like a huge, you know, point for the venues, is being able to reach customers and bring in new business. But the other thing is, and this is a feature that we ended up adding along the time, was in, I think, 2017, the bar I was telling you about, the 9-0, they get these crazy lines outside. And it was really, you know, how do you help owners monetize that line? Like, obviously people, there's always going to be people that are willing to, you know, pay to skip the line. They value their time more than their money. But, you know, does that money end up making it to the owner? Does that go to the bouncer or whoever's working the door? Like, is there a system to that? How do people who are watching know, like, oh, that person is getting in for free, or did they pay? Like, is that a VIP, whatever? And there was definitely guidance from bar owners on this, but we put together a feature called the Fast Pass, which is just a way for the owners to monetize that. So it's a feature that's available to anybody. You know, if you don't want to spend $10 to skip the line, if the line's 100 people long, you don't have to. But if you do want to, you have that option at least. And it's not like it's a mandatory thing. It's not a cover. It's just another way for the owners to directly monetize their venue. And I mean, the line outside, if they could sell drinks out there, they would, you know, and maybe with the new rules, they might be able to start doing that. yeah. But it's just, you know, we've tried to incorporate features that drive incremental revenue, really. And it's finding places to help the businesses make more money with things we're already doing. I guess the last major selling point, and this is really what the owners at the 9-0 and at Rocco's instilled in us early on, was the whole credit card processing fees. And, you know, they're losing 2 to 3% depending on the bank that they're working with every time someone swipes a credit card. So, you know, a $10 drink, that's 20, 30 cents. That doesn't feel like a lot, but over the course of a year, obviously that stuff adds up. Well, we figured out a way, and this is also something that I think separates us from some of the competitors that are doing mobile and digital payments. We figured out a way to either match or beat any processing rate, regardless of who they're processing with, what their rate is. We could process at 0% if we wanted to. And basically, that's just a way to go into a venue and say, look, we want to help you implement this system without creating any new expense for you. It's just something that they can understand right away. Okay, if I sell a drink for $10 with, you know, my current system, I'm going to lose 2-3%. If I sell it with BarPay, I might only lose 1%. And that's just math that they can do on the spot. Say over the course of a year, if I can save 0.5% of my credit card processing, that's another $20,000 in my bank. So just trying to give them objective things that they could see right away that are the benefits for their business.
Is there any cost to the bar owner?
How do you introduce this to a bar owner, as Joe said, without creating any expense? And effectively, we've been able to do that. And we've been doing that for the last couple of years as a part of an early adopter program, where we would just completely give the system away for free. At this point, if we know that the product works, we know the value that it creates, we still believe that it's very important in terms of our philosophy. If something like this is going to work at scale, you have the consumer side of the market, you have the venue owner side of the market, you have the staff side of the market. You're trying to sort of manage all these things. And it's time to scale up both. So if you go into a new market and you're able to add 50 new venues, well, then guess what? You then have to go out and scale up the consumer base that actually knows that they can go use BarPay at these places. Well, in that time, if you're not able to do that at rapid pace, and you're operating under sort of a traditional SaaS model where the venue's paying you a monthly recurring revenue, how long are they going to keep paying that if no one's actually using the service?
Right.
And so what we do at this point is, like, we say, look, there are some setup costs. There's actually some costs for the printer that we need to provide in order for the system to work. All that we ask is that you cover the cost of that printer. And what's beautiful about that is the printer that we use is actually, I mean, it's the standard in terms of thermal receipt printers in the service industry. So the worst, absolute worst possible case that could happen with BarPay is you purchase the system, which is it's to cover the cost of the hardware. And if nothing ever happened with it, you could actually just deploy that same hardware into your existing operations and have it printing tickets. In a lot of cases, depending on the venue, if we deem that it's a high volume place, we can certainly work with, and we're still open to providing the printers for free. Our long-term vision in terms of business model has been, we believe that the gold is in the data and what we can do with that. Joe hinted on some of the things that you can do, but another just quick example of how powerful this stuff can be. especially when you start getting that consumer network, is, you know, let's say, you know, in the world of craft beers, the rise of the craft beer, I don't know. It's just, it's insane, like, how many new craft beers are coming out and breweries, et cetera. So imagine you own a local craft brewery and you put two new IPAs out on tap, right? We have the ability to look into our data and say, here's all of the IPA drinkers that have ordered an IPA within the last 2 weeks that are within a 10-mile radius or a 5-mile radius of your craft brewery. And what's cool about that is if you're the consumer, right, and you're an IPA drinker and you love craft beer, are you upset that you get a notification saying, hey, here's $1 off an IPA? Well, absolutely not. Like, you're like, cool, let's go check this place out. Mm-hmm. And as the craft brew owner, you have a new channel. We believe that by providing value from that perspective, it's a much better synergy. It's easier way to build a relationship rather than just coming to a place saying, hey, our service is $300 and let's give you all these, you know, reasons why it's worth that much money, versus, hey, let's provide real value. And if we're able to do that in a meaningful way, we believe that we'll be the benefactors of the money on the telling.
So this is a Google play.
In a way, yeah.
Give everything away for free, and there will be people who will pay ads because of the data.
Yes, we believe that, both from the venue perspective and third-party brands. We do have features, and I would imagine that this isn't just a product that we came out with and, you know, we're done innovating. We'll get into with the digital menus thing. We always have our fingers on the pulse of what's happening. And so there will be other opportunities that come up, new features that I'm sure we'll come up with that we're able to monetize. I mean, the FastPass, for example, is a big revenue generator for us, but we can justify charging what we charge for that service because it's incremental revenue. It's found money for these owners. And they don't really bat an eye at saying, hey, we take a certain percentage of those sales. But on the drink side, we just believe that if it's ever truly going to scale, it has to be extremely friendly to the owners.
Right. Well, I can imagine somebody on Tinder connecting to BarPay and inviting somebody to a bar and the drink's already paid for. Just come on in, huh?
Another feature that we look forward to introducing at some point in the future is, you know, the ability, let's say you have a buddy in New York or something like that. It's their birthday and you know that they're out with their friends or whatever. It's like, you'll be able to have the ability to shoot your buddy a note, a little pop-up on their phone. It says, Dan wants to buy you a drink. And then they can accept that drink or decline it. And if they accept it, it prints the ticket at the bar that they're at.
So if I'm a bar owner, mm-hmm. and I have BarPay, and I know that the bar two blocks down the street's rocking and rolling, would I be able to flash a big offer to everybody who's in there right now?
You could send a push notification, yeah. And if anybody in there has the app and you're saying, hey, you know, shots.
Come on down here. Right. I'll beat anything you got there. Music is starting.
Yes.
The people will turn out.
Yep. To get interesting.
Move over. Nice. Very nice. All right. So let's talk about business. What do you guys think? Where do you want to be in a year from now? How do you measure it?
I think what's interesting for us, and Dan, I'm sure, has his comments on this too, but with everything going on in the world right now and, you know, the COVID situation, the new public health and safety guidelines that are coming out for restaurants and bars, and it's an interesting time in this industry and with what we have. I think, you know, based on everything that's gone on, when these places do start to reopen to dine in, they're going to be a lot more welcoming to new technologies and innovation than previously, which if you think about the bar industry, I mean, it's been around for thousands of years without much change. I mean, you go to the bar, you tell someone what you want to drink, they give it to you, you give them currency. That really hasn't been any difference in that for a long time. But I think with, you know, the new concerns and how clean everything needs to be now, and really the customer's perception of what's clean has changed. I think that because we have this new, or we have this contactless payment and ordering platform, it's something that I believe venues now will actually, instead of us necessarily going out and trying to convince them why they need this service, it's something that now is becoming more of a necessity from their end, just because of, you know, number one, there are actual guidelines saying, you know, please try and implement digital menus or digital ordering or contactless payments. but also, you know, the customers. We talk to people basically every day now when we're going in and talking to venue owners or customers. It's like, people are scared to touch menus. People are scared to hand over credit cards. They're thinking about this stuff more. And, you know, I think that's a little unfortunate overall, but at the same time, you know, it could be a good thing for the industry as a whole as it transitions them to technologies that can make things a little bit easier. So when you ask, where do we want to be a year from now, because of this situation and the current state of the industry, we actually added a new service. It's just a digital menu capability. It doesn't tie into an app or an order and payment platform, because after talking to a lot of owners about what they're going to do when they dine in, it seems like the simplest solution for a time like this is what's going to get the most traction, at least initially. And so what we did was, within the last week, we have created the ability for any venue owner to simply upload a PDF of their menu. And this is bars, restaurants, whatever. Basically upload a PDF of your menu to a website and instantly get a QR code generated that you can just put on your tables, whether it's table 10 or you secure it. Any customer with any phone camera doesn't have to have an app. They just hold the camera over the QR code and it will automatically bring up your digital menu, just a PDF. So there isn't any clicking through it. There's no ordering. There's no payments. Obviously, we have those capabilities, but just for the last couple of weeks, what we've been seeing is venue owners are taking it one step at a time. And I think the first transition into this is implement some type of digital menu service, which I believe our product from a customer and an owner standpoint is as easy as it gets, you know?
The camel's presence under the tent, right?
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. No, but I like this. It's pretty good.
Exactly. So I think because of that, and because it literally does take only 5 minutes for an owner to set up their menu. This part is like a free service. Mm-hmm. It doesn't require salespeople, you know, in every town like the full system does, where you have to go and give a full demonstration of, look, this is what a ticket looks like. This is how you put your sales into the system. It's just, you know, you go to a website and you upload a PDF, and we are reaching out. We have press releases going out. We're working with newspapers. We're trying to get in with restaurant associations, just saying, look, if you're an owner and you've thought about disposable versus digital menus,
here it is.
Disposables they can be costly. You're going to have to spend a lot of time printing them, but look, here's basically a solution for you that you can have implemented.
Free. And don't bother that we're going to be in touch with you to talk about some other things that you might have on your mind.
Look, you take step one with the menu.
We'll give that some time.
You like it, and then we introduce you to step two.
Sure, absolutely. We got some things we like to try out here.
But yeah, so I mean, you know, with the current state of things, I would say we're hoping to be in thousands of accounts within the next year, especially with the digital menu service, and then the venues that want to continue and take the next steps. It's only going to create more value for them.
So you know, without opening the kimono too big, where are you roughly right now?
In terms of the full payment system, we've had over 50 venues that have implemented that across the country. The issue that we've had with that is, we are a small team. It's Dan and I. We have a couple developers, and then we have a startup accelerator that we've recently partnered with. But basically, because we're still doing all the onboarding and all the sales, you know, we have to spend months at a time. For example, we launched Charlotte, North Carolina last year. We had, I think it was 15 of the most popular bars around the entire city. They all kicked off the same week. There was a bunch of news that went out, a bunch of social media posts. And, you know, for that 1 to 2 months of just, here's a big launch, it took 5 months to set up with just two people, you know, literally hitting the ground doing the sales. Mm-hmm. So in terms of adding venues for the full order and payment system, I mean, we've really been pretty focused on going after a college demographic. Charlotte was obviously a little bit bigger deal for us because we'd never tried an entire city. But I mean, where the product actually is live and works before all this COVID stuff, we had over 30 venues who, you know, any given busy night, you know, bar pay was the way that people were going to be ordering their drinks. And we didn't really promote the food aspect at that point. Like I said, we were focused more on the college demographic because we had seen success there with the USC and the UCLA venues. But, you know, opening back up, we think that there's a little bit bigger market now. And that's why I think we're going to be a little bit more aggressive in the venues we go after. We used to be very specific. We want to make sure that if we actually chose, you know, look, we're going to pitch this venue. If we implement the system, we know we're going to have to spend a week or two there to make sure that the staff has everything under control to help get the word out to the people. I think it's going to be a little bit different moving forward because, like I said, it's not going to be as much of a nice to have anymore as a necessity. But then, I mean, going back to the digital menu aspect, like that's just basic stuff. That's something that.
What I'm hearing is you really have two sales, right? One sale is to the bar owner, and attached to that is the sale to the app user, the consumer. So those two go together. And then your second sale is to the ad play.
Yeah. Yeah. There's actually another one too. And that's sort of getting the staff to understand, because I mean, look, everyone's creatures of habit, and the staff has a lot of questions as well. And we don't necessarily get to spend the same amount of time with each person that a venue owner has employed. And so everyone has their own spin and own questions. And it's funny because we feel like we're out doing the sales, like how often we answer the same questions over and over and over just from different parties. But from the staff perspective, we get some pushback there. And I think that it's natural, but I just think that it's sort of a misconception of what BarPay is and what BarPay is about. Typically they don't realize that we actually guarantee tips. You know, BarPay as a service, one of the things that we did and we knew we had to do was make sure that on some level, the staff that actually is delivering and making these drinks is taken care of. And so it's actually part of the service as a user, as a consumer, is that you're basically guaranteeing the staff. You can't stiff a bartender or a server through BarPay. It's impossible.
Once you order the drink, it's automatically that you're going to be paying 15 to 20% tip.
Exactly. And then you can choose to add more if you'd like. Yep.
And when you walk out of the geofence, it's done.
It's done. Yep. That money is theirs. And we knew that that was extremely important. And most of the questions, reservations that the staff have subside once they realize, like, oh, you're giving me a guaranteed tip. Because that's the first thing that they're worried about is like, well, what about my tips? And obviously, you know, working with owners and stuff, like, we knew those are going to be very, very important to make sure that the staff was taken care of.
Well, when and how do you go about making money? Because that's all going to come through advertising, right?
Yes and no. We do. I mean, what's fascinating, again, about our business model is we are able to capture a small slice of the transaction. Is you would have to be at serious scale in order for that to sustain a company.
You're not going to make your salary on that right now.
That's correct.
And I mean, and in terms of rolling it out, because you're building your network, building your platform, that's got a lot to do with the value of the company, right? At some point, yes, the company's going to be big enough that Anheuser-Busch is going to say, hey, maybe we want to own this thing. But that's an investment of time, resources, and money to make that happen. I mean, you said you had to spend a couple of weeks in Charlotte. So that's going on, and you're not getting you're not getting enough to pay your salary from all of that right now. That's my guess.
That's correct. That's correct.
Right. When and how? I'll just ask you: is there any other source other than ads?
Just to give you an example, it really has to do with volume, right? So if you have if the volume's there, we could certainly sustain and continue to grow organically. And that's sort of with our recent partnership with Logic Boost. Obviously, this COVID-19 situation has really hampered sort of the plan that we had laid forth, because it was effectively going after the top five college markets, or what we considered the top five college markets in the U.S. As Joe has mentioned, plans have changed on that front a little bit. But if you take a look at our revenues from the 9-0 and USC, and you take that and you put that in, you replicate that in 10, 12, 15 places, easily it pays for our salaries. And the reason for that is, you know, especially places that get really busy. And obviously this is one of the reasons that we wanted to look at the college market, is you have the same customers going to the same bars week in and week out. And a lot of these places get lines. Well, the 9-0 did close to 100K in a year in FastPass. There's definitely,
you get part.
Yeah, we do. We take a much bigger chunk than what we take on drink sales, because again, that's found money. So you start scaling that up, it's like, hey, you know, like, we got something here on the transaction side. So it's not 100% ad based. We just believe that that's where the true value is.
Okay. Well, and so what's the plan for tapping into that true value?
Joe, if you want to, I think, talk on sort of the plan for, you know, when colleges do come back, sort of what that looks like.
Well, they're going to be back. Colleges are going to be back, right? they may or may not be inside the bar.
Well,
but they're going to be drinking.
Yeah, it's interesting is that we've been seeing, you know, keeping up with some of the universities that are not going to have students back in the fall, but it's just going to depend on the town. So we had picked five of, you know, the top party school is not the best word, but places where there's big bar scenes.
Socially close schools.
Socially close schools. There you go.
Yeah, so we had five of those. You know, you're talking about like your Penn States, your University of Georgia, Florida State, South Carolina, and Madison, Wisconsin were the five that we have mapped out.
Probably not Texas Christian. That's my school.
You know, they made a couple lists. You'd be surprised.
All right. Way to go.
The nightlife and party scene list. But yeah, basically we have a plan put together where, you know, spend the same amount of time in each one of those towns, and we have it all budgeted out to do basically what we did in Charlotte, but focus in a more, you know, centralized environment. So, you know, with Charlotte, big city, you've got a lot of other things going on, your professional sports teams, a lot of, you know, people coming in to travel for work. It's a big banking city versus you have these college towns where, and we want to be very specific. It's like, look, this is the only thing going on in this town. It's not like USC where there's downtown Los Angeles or Hollywood 10 minutes away. It's like, you go to school here and the bars are all that you have on the weekend. Right. There are, you know, places like that. So basically the plan was to go and replicate what we did in Charlotte, which was, you know, sign at least half of the venues to do a simultaneous launch, have big marketing, in terms of, you know, having boots on the ground, we do the promo stuff. We have the drink giveaways, just enough to make the people aware, the customers aware that BarPay is now here and it's in all the venues that you go to. And really, you know, at least based on the projections that we had, that should have been more than enough compelling users to get the brands on board, to get distributors, which we've done in small scales. We've worked with other brands outside Tinder, like we've worked with some liquor companies. And then in Charlotte, we did some stuff with Jägermeister, and I'm blanking on the other one out there. But yeah, basically, once you have a decent amount of users and venues within a certain area, you can work with the distributors, you can work with the people that, you know, they carry the Bud Lights, the Budweisers, and they're looking for ways, how do I get, you know, the 21-year-old to start drinking my beer instead of the other beer? Because typically the studies show what you start drinking, definitely not before college, no one does that. But once you turn 21, typically that will stay your light beer of choice or whatever for the next 5-10 years of your life until you start making a little more money and drink nicer stuff. But basically, you know, that was part of the plan. The other aspect of the advertising and the digital, you know, the data is, I'm going to keep going back to these digital menus just because it's such a simple thing for the venues to implement. But also for us, now you don't have to get the second side of it. You don't have to have customers actually downloading the app to be able to utilize them for advertising. So, you know, if you think about being a new liquor company, for example, let's say you're a tequila company. You don't have, you know, the resources, you can't compete with the Casamigos, but every time someone looks at a menu at, you know, this restaurant, your tequila company is the one sponsoring that menu. Now, you know, we're creating value there immediately, and it's not all the way to the conversion because it's not with the order and pay side of things, but it is impressions, and it's guaranteed impressions when they're about to place an order. So, you know, we think that that's actually going to be pretty easy, not easy, but at least we'll have some opportunities to work with some brands on that aspect. In fact, we've talked to a couple already, and I bring up a tequila company because it looks like part of what's going to be interesting is these companies already have people doing sales. They have the relationships with the decision makers. Now we're giving them a new piece of technology that all the decision makers are going to be looking for. And in return, they're going to get brand exposure to the customers when they first start going back. So like I said, I think it's going to be a pretty cool opportunity right when things open back up.
Yeah, that's exciting. Very exciting. And just the whole notion of being able to Uber a drink, right? Mm-hmm. And you're also creating that opportunity for the bar owner to make more sales because he all of a sudden, well, he and the server have more time.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the clearest examples of, I mean, think about how many times, I'll speak for myself, how many times I've been in a bar and just the sheer volume, the fact that it's going to take, you know, another 10, 15 minutes just to get my drink. I have that sort of decision. We're about to leave. I kind of want another drink, but I don't want to wait 15 minutes.
Right.
You know, you could get that extra sale. Or to Joe's point earlier, it's like I sit, as soon as I sit down, you know, I'll use the digital menu example. One of the cool things that we're going to be able to do is if you are a, you know, if you're a bar pay active venue, meaning you're actually, you've deployed the order and payment system, and you've also made the wise decision of, you know, implementing the digital menus for everyone, we can just simply, with the flip of a button, you know, when your menu pops up, it says, you know, view menu, which is the simple PDF, no app required. But you can also offer the ability just right underneath that, order with BarPay. And so it just makes it easy. And it's just a, it's sort of a great synergy, what we're doing with the digital menus and how it actually ties into our core technology.
Well, and it fits right hand in glove with COVID-19. Constraints. I mean, that's just amazing. You guys are in exactly now. I'm just wondering, did you guys create the COVID, all this COVID stuff, just to make your app work?
No, we can't claim that one.
Wow.
That's
because it just seems to be such a wonderful, wonderful thing. Well, all right. So what would you like to say to folks as we're coming to the end of our time together, which has been very enjoyable? What would you like to say to folks?
I think just when places do start to reopen, you know, be smart. Obviously, you know, there's going to be people that have their concerns. But like I said, you know, venues are going to take precautions. They're going to do everything they can to make sure that people have the safest environment. Obviously, I think our products fit really well in line with that. But at the same time, you know, I also think people have to start living their lives again. Like we can't do things out of fear. And I think that, you know, bars, restaurants, that's part of, you know, being social. That's a lot of, you know, jobs in this country. People love that environment. Just be smart when you do it. And
right. Don't be stupid.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's great. This has been really wonderful. I mean, this is just another example of how businesses thrive in California. And here you are thriving and getting ready to thrive even more in the midst of these constraints. So that's wonderful. That's what this show is all about, is highlighting businesses that are thriving in California. So it's a Pilgrim on the 405 saying thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Will.
You've been listening to the Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist.